Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Development Management Committee. Do we have any apologies, please?
None, Chairman.
No apologies. The minutes of the last meeting have been circulated. Are you happy that I sign them as a correct record of those proceedings? Thank you very much. Thank you. I would like to ask the members if they would say who they are, please, and if we can start at the far end, just say who you are and which ward you represent. Excuse me.
Councillor Stephen Brooksbank, Rampton with Hyde.
Mark Kingscote, councillor for Shippey and the Willows.
Ruth Pentney, councillor for Clifton with Maiden Way in Paignton.
Pete Harris, councillor for St Mary Church.
Jane Barnby, councillor for Goodrington with Roselands.
Jackie Stockman, councillor for Barry Hebbers with Brixham.
Andrew Baldry, St Mary's with Somerham, Brixham.
Mike Morey, vice chairman of the DMC. Sorry, Brett Beryl. And Barry Head and Frozen Ward.
Thank you. And if the officers would like to also say who they are.
Thank you, Beryl. Pat Stewart, I head up the Strategic Planning and Development Management team.
Okay, I'm Ian Jones, Principal Engineer for Highways Development and Traffic.
I'm Peter Roberts, I'm the Team Leader for Development Management and Council.
I'm Councillor Beryl MacPhail and I chair this particular meeting.
Amanda Coote, Governance Support.
And James Oram, Solicitor.
Thank you. Now, will you please note that this meeting will be audio recorded, so please ensure that you use your microphone when addressing the meeting and that it is switched off when you're not using it. Also, a trial is being undertaken during today's meeting for video equipment to possibly web stream meetings in the future. We're not expecting any fire alarm testing today, but in the event of an evacuation, you will hear a recorded message requesting you to evacuate the building, in which case please leave by the nearest exit. The Riviera Centre staff will assist you, and once outside, please assemble in the Lifestyle members' car park opposite the main entrance. Please also ensure that your mobile phone is switched off or turned to silent. Are there any declarations of interest, please, from any of the people here, either personal or pecuniary interest? Take it, that's no. Thank you. And officers, either no. Thank you very much. Right. Now we have, I think, one or two urgent items, so if you would like to deal with those, please.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Just one urgent item, which is in respect of an item from a couple of months back on a previous agenda, which was Birdshaven. And members may recall that. It was an application for a single dwelling house on a site near Rowcroft in Torquay. At the time, the committee resolved to approve the scheme, subject to a 106 being signed within 3 months, or the application be refused. Unfortunately, through a joint effort between the applicants and ourselves, there's been some delay in resolving the Section 106, and it's gone a couple of weeks over that. It's now been completed. The decision was taken by officers not to refuse it after the 3 months, the reason being that it had already gone over its 8 weeks expiry period, so it wouldn't have been determined within the statutory period, and the cause for the delay was not merely the applicant's fault. So it was decided at best to bring it back to say the 106 has been completed, about 2 weeks over time. I do apologise for that, but I wondered whether the members of the committee would allow me now to grant that consent.
Yes. Would those that support that please
indicate? Yeah, I would move that, so.
A seconder. Yeah. Thank you. All in agreement? Thank you very much. Thank you. Right, we'll now move on to the planning application at the junction of Kings Ash Road and Spruce Way, Paignton. If we could have a presentation on this, please.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is the application for a proposed new junction and access works along the King's Ash Road. And you'll recall, as members, we carried out a site visit earlier on today, and we parked our minibus at Ramshill Road, and we walked along the footpath, and we just took a view of the proposed arrangement. This is a red line site location plan, which just shows the extent of the application site along the King's Ash Road, the existing carriageway, and within the vicinity of the Hilltop Nurseries, Smallcombe Cross to the east, and the junctions that already exist at Spruce Way and Ramshill Road. This is an aerial photograph of the existing arrangement. You can see the nursery here between the junctions with Spruce Way and Ramshill Road, and then further down King's Ash Road, the junction with Luscombe Lane, and then Coathill Drive. This is the proposed layout for the application. It's intended to provide an additional junction and access to serve phase two of the allocated housing sites at Great Parks. The proposal is to widen the existing carriageway to provide capacity for that new junction and to ensure that appropriate stacking distances are retained on the junctions. So you can see the existing carriageway. You may be able to make this out. Unfortunately, the colours haven't come out very well on the presentation. They were a little clearer on the site visit, but effectively an orange which stretches across the top of the existing carriageway running along the King's Ash Road, which remains to the same width, and that's extended then to the south here on the plan where this red edge runs in the vicinity of the Hilltop Nurseries and also in the vicinity of the two residences, one called Smallcombe, the other I believe is called Miska, which is in this area here. So the proposal is to provide that additional junction and also serve as a new access for Hilltop Nurseries in this vicinity here, providing them with scope for an expansion of their car park if required. That access also serves land to the south, which will provide for facilities for grazing of horses, which takes place further to the south. There have been a number of representations, principal representations from the occupiers of Smallcombe and Miska. The concerns raised in respect of the taking of some of the land to the front of Smallcombe and the impact of the development of the junction and of the increased carriageway on their living conditions, and the same in respect of Miska. Comments were fed through to the Highways Department in respect of the access to Miska. And on the back of those comments, it's been concluded that via a condition we can actually agree to amend the access and move it further across to the west. This will ensure that if somebody is leaving the property at Miska and turning right, they don't have to come across two streams of traffic. So they can effectively come out at this area here and come out at to the right without having to cross two streams of traffic. You'll note in your report there's a number of conditions. If I can refer you to those, that's on page 23. And this follows a number of consultation responses, including with our ecological advisers and with our archaeology advisers. The Council has carried out a habitat regulations assessment screening report, and that has concluded, and that should be in your late representations, that's concluded that an appropriate assessment is not required, subject to these conditions carrying through to the consent, if you were to grant it. There are two items which I'd like to add on to that list of headers for the conditions. Condition 4 refers to a landscaping plan to address ecological mitigation measures and replacement tree planting. I'd like to also include in there relevant phasing for the delivery of hedgerows. It specifically talks about tree planting. I just want to be clear that we're also talking about the replacement hedgerows coming back. And also, in addition, there's been some correspondence, some helpful correspondence with a Mr. Jempson who's requested advanced stop lines be provided. And these will ensure that at the various stop points and the junctions, that there's an advanced stop line for cyclists, and that assists them in traversing the junction. So I'd also like to add a condition in that respect. You'll notice in your representations there was also reference to the access through past Hilltop Nurseries to the land to the south, and whether or not heavy goods vehicles could use that access. We propose to deal with that by way of condition, to consider whether it's feasible to allow them to operate through that access, and I've included that in the list on page 23. So, notwithstanding the representations that have been made, the officer's view is that the junction and its impact as a form of development is acceptable. It's really important for you also to understand the background to this, which is that it opens up, subject to completion of the development by a prospective developer, it opens up the land to the south and to the east for further housing development, part of your local plan, and it is a vital consideration as part of what you're determining today. So the recommendation is one of conditional approval. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have one speaker, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. If you would like to come forward, Mr. Sullivan. You have 5 minutes, and if you would switch on your microphone so that everyone can hear your comments. And we'll remind you when you're at the end of your time. Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm Kevin Sullivan. I live in Smallcombe. And as you can see from the drawings there, this whole project does affect me considerably. Main concern really is, after we've lost some of our garden, is going to be coming in and out of the property. We're also going to have problems, although there's not two carriageways directly outside of our house, we will be coming out and going into the property with merging traffic. Now, we've got no issues with the proposed development of the junction, as progress must go on. We're not obviously too happy with the pollution aspect. We've got fears for the structure of the building, with obviously heavier traffic and more traffic closer by. And of course the noise factor, and obviously, as I said, the road being closer. The situation has blighted our property for 2 years now. This has been going on that long. Holding up plans for us to upgrade our property or even move, because no estate agent is going to take this on at a price which is reasonable to what it was before this project was mooted, in view of the fact of that the road is going to go in. The property has been devalued. We were informed after making further inquiries about 2 months back that the junction had been shelved due to the housing developers classing the junction as over-engineered, so started work on our property. A week later, the Herald Express published that the ring road from Malden to Windy Corner had been granted government funding of £7.1 million towards the £12.5 million required to dual the road, joining up all the small stretches of junctions and dual existing as it is now. Phoning the highways and council and having difficulty getting anyone to talk to me about it, then being told no plans were available, I found detailed plans on the internet within minutes. I'm at a loss as how the £7.1 million can be allocated to a project and no one seems to know about, or offices concerned were unable to help me with information when it is in the public domain and in the newspapers. This project's called the Western Corridor Plans, published in detail on the net. On the Spruce Way plans, The Spruce Way plans take a corner of our parking area. The new plan takes out the whole front garden, leaving the a carriageway, which will be a tri-carriageway by that time, 2 to 2.5 metres from the front of the building. This does not include any footpaths or cycle tracks that might need to go in as well to access the Westerland Valley. This will leave no parking, turning, privacy and noise and pollution problems, to say nothing about the dangers involved. Reading through this, funding has been granted because it is a spade ready. It also has a time scale, being the whole project completed within 4 years. Torquay Development Agency has said they are hoping to take a full report to council in early 2014. So Spruce Way Junction will mean the purchase of a corner of our parking area, the repositioning of a substantial wall and making good our parking, only to be ripped up and knocked down and redone, all within a very short period of time. Smallcombe has been blighted by this for the past 2 years and is now in a worse position than before. Due to the new proposals, The devaluation is vast due to the loss of all the parking and carriageway being a couple of metres from the house, noise, pollution and possible structural problems which will almost certainly arise. The proposal should the property should be purchased by the council or highways, enabling the road project to go ahead unhindered. The building sits on 0.33 of an acre, and when the road is completed, will leave two, possibly three building plots to be sold on to recoup the cost of purchase. This would enable new dwellings to be built further back from the road, eliminating the problems which will affect the existing house. We have received a letter from the Torbay Development Agency, which advises us avoid spending money unless such as essential or for safety reasons. And another quote was, I can advise you as to the position. You were to spend money which would enhance the value of your house, i.e. as to whether that would be reflected in the compensation. And the third part of it was, however, it seems clear to me the expenditure which did not enhance value could be wasted. The whole situation for us is very unsatisfactory. Both these projects cross over. So without linking the two with regards to Smorgon, money will be wasted.
Thank you. You've had your time. Thank you very much. Right. You wish to...
If I can, Chair, come in and make a couple of comments and just try and clear a few matters up. What we're dealing with today is the application for the provision of the new junction and the improvement of the arrangement opposite Ramshill Road and Spruce Way. What I believe the gentleman is alluding to is a further piece of potential infrastructure which the Highways Authority are looking at, connecting this area with the land further to the north, the Churscombe Cross roundabout, and about improvements on line in that vicinity and about the potential widening. Now, the two are very separate issues. You're dealing with, as a committee, determining whether or not this application should be approved. However, it's worthwhile ensuring that what we don't do is we go and do a piece of work and then 5 minutes later dig it up again and start again. So I do think that in the event you were to approve this application today, it would be worthwhile putting an informative on, clarifying that the eventual developer of this junction ensures they have a dovetailing with the Highways Authority such that we don't do a piece of work twice and expend money and deal with this situation two times over.
Right, thank you very much. Members, any questions for the officers, please? Yes, Councillor Waldron.
Thank you, Chair. Just bearing in mind the comments we've heard from the gentleman, is there a timescale? You mentioned the highways project. Is there a timescale for that? Ian?
Yeah. Okay, Chairman. Yeah, just as I say, the Western Corridor at the moment is for funding for the financial years 2015 to 2016 and 2016-2017. We've only got an indicative at the moment that that funding has been approved, but obviously no formal approval at the moment. So the likelihood for this particular section is the least developed of all the proposals we have. Therefore, it is likely to be in the latter part of that timescale.
Could I add to that, Chair,
yes,
if I may? That just pick up on both points made, one by Peter and then by Ian. That dovetails very nicely with the likely commencement on the Great Parks Phase 2 development, and therefore commencement on the access there, because we believe that the future developers will want to submit an outline application for the comprehensive redevelopment of Great Parks Phase 2. That'll take a little while to work through the system. Obviously, the land needs to be sold first as well, so that's probably 18 months away, if not 2 years. So that ties quite neatly into delivery of the wider Western Corridor improvements.
Well, is this the second part of your same question?
Just a quick follow-up. Just for clarity then, while one hears the difficulty for the person concerned, if there's a claim for compensation, that's a matter between him and council. It's nothing to do with what we're here today.
Thank you.
Councillor Stockman.
would you mind, the Highways Officer, would you mind explaining a little bit more clearly how this ties into the traffic light system, you know, which is slightly to the left? As we stood this morning, we've got traffic lights to the left and the new road going in slightly to the left of the nursery. Could you explain how that's going to work as a junction? And this isn't a question really, but so there's that. The other bit that worries me is that we've come to something looking at this when we didn't have any knowledge of anything that was coming forward that might have to do it. So I don't want to agree to something that we might have to do twice. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Okay, if I take the question the about traffic. the traffic signals first. In reality, it's not hugely different from what you have at the moment. Obviously, what you have at the moment is a three-armed traffic signal junction. It will revert to a larger four-arm traffic signal junction at the same place. So, effectively, there will be additional lanes on the Western Corridor. Mm. But now, obviously, that will take account of the fact that there will be an extra phase within that signalling. So that will allow more traffic to actually go through the King's Ash Road side. Mm. But effectively, instead of a three-arm junction, there only will be a four-arm junction. So it's very, very simply, it's no bigger change than that.
Right.
And if I could pick up the second point, if I can just try and sort of set you at ease, members. What we're being asked to deal with today, what we're asking you to make a decision on today, is very much about opening up this new junction, this new access into the land to the south. I'm absolutely certain, in discussion with our highways officers, that we can avoid this potential opportunity to have to do things two times over. And I'm certain we can work together to avoid that.
Right.
Before I ask for other members to come in, I'll ask for some legal advice here, please.
Yes. Well, one of the issues raised by the person who spoke regarding this development is with regard to planning blight. I must say that actually a formal claim for that has not yet been received by the council, although myself has been in contact with that gentleman's solicitors, and indeed I've invited them to submit a claim. However, as Councillor Baldry rightly alluded to, the issue of compensation in respect of a future development would be for a matter between the council in its capacity as highway authority to compensate at a later date, should such a claim arise and be deemed to be valid by the council. But at this stage, we have not actually accepted liability as to planning blight.
That. Could I ask Councillor Brooksbank then, please, to ask your question?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Is this a 30 mile an hour speed road, please?
Yes, it will maintain the existing operation, which is 30 mile an hour, just slightly higher up from the junction where we stood. So it will continue to be 30 mile an hour.
Councillor Barnby, please. You don't want to, all right. Councillor Addison, please.
Thank you. Yeah, I take note of the gentleman spoke from Smallcombe. Thank you for putting my microphone on. I can now hear myself. It is concerning. I mean, the gentleman's here. Obviously, there's going to be noise pollution. There will be added impact, obviously, with increased traffic. Are you telling me, basically, all this can be dealt with at a later date?
I don't think that's what we're saying. What we're saying is there will be an impact from these works, but what we're hoping to do is, if the works for the Western Corridor come on stream, that the two can be dealt with at the same time. So if those works for the Western Corridor result in further change to the frontage of Smallcombe, and if that were consented, if it needed a planning consent, then the two would run together. We wouldn't do these works and then 6 months down the line open up the whole issue again and do them again. I think that's what we're saying. In terms of the planning impact, the impact of this development on the residents of Smallcombe and Miska, we've discussed that in our report, and the conclusions are that although it will have an impact, we think it's acceptable given the proximity of the already existing dwelling to the already existing highway. The change is not substantial.
Thank you.
Right, any further questions? Any debate then, please? Right, Councillor Baldry.
I don't know about debate, but I'm prepared to move approval.
Did you have a seconder?
I'll second, Chair.
Councillor Moray. Right, those in favour, please indicate.
With the conditions.
Yeah. Oh, obviously with the conditions outlined earlier, yes. And against? Abstentions? One abstention. Right, we shall now move on to the next application, which is Bishop's Court, Lower Warbury Road, Torquay. This is in several parts, but I'll ask Peter if he will give us a presentation on it, please.
Thank you, Chair. This is actually four planning applications at the same site, the Bishop's Court, the former Bishop's Court Hotel on Lower Warbury Road, Torquay. What I'll do is I'll present them as a whole, since they're all interconnected and effectively will result in the redevelopment of the whole site. And then towards the end, when a decision is due, we'll obviously have to take those in turn. But just to go through the site and the proposed development with you, this is the red edge of the site here on plan. So you've had access off of Lower Warbury Road, which we drove up earlier on today, to a car park at the top, which is immediately adjacent to the villa at Bishop's Court. Behind the villa, you have a number of apartments, effectively to the rear, onto the middle Warbury Road, where there's a stone wall which runs all the way across. To the east of the villa, there is an existing terrace at higher level. Which continues to be in place at the moment, and at the lower level, there is partially demolished previous accommodation. You can see that more clearly on this site photograph. So this is the villa and the terrace where we stood and looked across. You can see some of the accommodation that existed before in this area, and also the larger terrace towards the top onto Middle Warbury Road. You can also see the mews arrangement towards the back of the existing villa. Again, this is the scheme that was previously approved back in 2009 for 42 units on the site, using the existing access arrangements and providing a set of terraces, two terraces to replace existing accommodation. So one towards the lower end of the site and one towards the top onto Middle Warbury Road. And again, that scheme would have created 42 units along with spa and treatment and pool facilities. And was, although it was an open residential use, it was effectively seeking to be a quasi-holiday destination. That approved scheme, which you can see here in this image as well, took the terraced approach, cutting into the landscape as the existing arrangement does, and again retained much of the yew tree walk area to the pavilion building at the end. And an arrangement that also ensured that the stepping down with the topography of the land was persistent. This is the proposed site layout as we have it now. And the proposal is for a total of 34 units, although the four applications you have are actually for 31 units. That's because three of the units already rely on the previous consent, and those three units are towards the rear of the villa onto Middle Warbury Road in this vicinity. So the 31 units that's been applied for are the 18 to the east, that's 9 within the terrace at the top, that's a terrace of 4-bed units, and then 9 further townhouses within the terrace, garden terrace towards the lower end to the east, and then a group of 6 residential units towards the back of the car park area in a revised arrangement here, and a total of 7 units within the listed villa itself. Just going through the levels of the site, just so you can understand the proposals. Again, access is remaining as it is at the moment off of Lower Warbury Road. We have had comments from our highways officers about that access. Whilst they're not objecting to the scheme, I think their preference would be to widen that access. I've contemplated that with other officers, and I think our concern would be the impact on the listed building, and that actually, if the access is approached from the right way, that there is adequate visibility from and of emerging vehicles. So we would prefer to retain that access as it is, notwithstanding a comment from our highways officers. So you come into the site, and then at the first level, effectively the car parking and garaging for the lower terrace of 9 residential units, and an access through from this point just below the terrace that we stood on here earlier today of the listed villa to facilitate access and parking towards the rear for the higher row of terrace dwellings. At level 2, you can see that access running right the way through to the back to serve the 9 four-bed dwellings at the back of the site and provide them with accommodation, garaging and access. And you can also see at this level, the first level of the listed building itself, where it's proposed to provide 45% of the floor space that was previously proposed in terms of spa and other facilities. Also understand it's proposed to provide a pool, although that hasn't been shown on earlier versions of the plans. Understand there'll be a revised plan to show the provision of a pool in there as well. Up to level 3, you can see the first level of accommodation on the rear terrace of 9 and the continued provision of accommodation on the lower terrace. And again into the ground floor of the villa, which we looked at earlier today, a very fine example, certainly interior-wise, of a listed villa of this era. And the retention in the revised arrangement of many of the principal major rooms. They would look to be subdivided under the arrangement of 8 flats, but now we have 7 flats. We're able to retain some of those larger rooms without subdividing them. Just up to level 4, and here you can see the higher level of the lower terrace, if I could put it that way, where it's proposed to provide additional accommodation. And this is the point that's been raised by English Heritage. They have a concern that when viewed from the terrace of the listed building and looking across to the lower terrace, that these pavilion-type structures or penthouse-type structures on the top of that terrace form would interrupt views from and of the listed villa. We have a further view of that, which I can show you in a minute, and we'll be considering that issue later on in the meeting, no doubt. So just the internal arrangements of that front terrace, which you can see here, the proposed garage on the ground floor, up to the first floor with the main living accommodation, and then providing additional bedroom accommodation within the third floor. And that's again the point at which the building is broken down, and there are effectively a gap tooth appearance towards that top floor. The proposed arrangement for the rear terrace, you have garaging and access again on the ground floor. The main accommodation, as per the lower terrace, is on the first floor. And then you have 2 floors of additional accommodation provided, each of them with 4 bedrooms. So in terms of sections and elevation, the section at the top here is very helpful. It's a section cut through those 2 terraces. Demonstrates the fact that the terrace at the top will remain below the level or in line with the level of the wall on Middle Warbury Road. That's very important. We've recently refused applications near this site at Spa Court for development which comes above the level of the wall on Middle Warbury Road. We're very keen to secure the retention of that eye level across. It's an important view and it's an important stone wall. So that's the main terrace at the back of the site. And then you can see in the middle of the site the retention of what we're referring to as the yew tree walk. And that'll be replanted so that you have yew trees on either side of that walk towards the listed structure, historic structure at the end, sort of pavilion garden building. And then as you roll down the site, you can see the lower terrace and the sort of bridge link across it, which will form part of the garden structure. And again, you can see that on the top, of that, the third floor is effectively cut in from its front and rear, and that is the element which on front elevation, which is down here at the bottom of this slide, you can see the punch throughs and the gaps which are created by this form of architecture. The remainder of the terrace is very much a sort of linear horizontal form, and I believe it's that which the English Heritage letter specifically refers to. As officers, we've taken the view that given the level differences and the fact that you'll be looking down onto this structure, and given the fact that it is predominantly a terraced linear form, we believe that the architecture is acceptable in terms of its relationship to the listed building. And again, this slide just demonstrates that impact, the proposed sectional relationship. You can see that here, you can see the terrace adjacent to the listed villa, and the fact that albeit around about a metre up From that terrace you will see these structures. They are sat considerably lower than the existing listed villa. For the upper terrace, you can see a slightly different form, a sort of arched approach, but again, principally with rubble limestone to the front facade. And again, towards the rear elevation, there's very limited views of the rear. In fact, I don't think you'd see it unless you were very, very tall and stood on Middle Warbury Road. The top arrangement to the top floor is slightly different to that of the lower terrace, and it's probably worth considering whether this approach, which provides less obvious gaps between the various terraces, is something which members might want to continue for the lower terrace if you took English Heritage's concerns on board, which at the moment as officers we don't in particular. So the villa on the ground floor, you can see the proposed arrangements, retention of, as I say, of many of the principal rooms, and as you go up the building, again we've sought to, through the architects and with our officers, retain the character of that original building. Just up to the second floor flat as well. Rear elevation to that villa, we also stood towards the back of the building and looked at this, taking the opportunities available to refurbish and renew and replace in order to provide a listed building which goes back effectively to its heyday. Just in terms of the rear block of Mews properties, six properties towards the rear, what we've done is we've moved the building away from the listed villa. This part here is a jutting out of the main villa. This here is the previous line of the existing development. You can see that here, this dotted line. And what the architect has done is provide a revised arrangement which moves these Mews buildings away from the listed villa, which is very much something we favour. And you can see that disposed across the two floors. In elevation, again, we've taken a random rubble stone approach to the elevations, trying to create a recessive Mews-type building which sits behind the listed villa. So those are the plans, and perhaps if I can just pull up the main plan once again. There we go. I'll just talk through some of the key issues with you. So you have no representations. There are no objections or letters of support in respect of this application, and we don't believe as officers there are any particular neighbour amenity or living condition issues for you. You have an approval in 2009 for a scheme of 42 units along with leisure facilities. You have that approval implemented. Back in 2012 there was a certificate of lawfulness granted for that consent, so it's live and could be completed at any time. You now have an application for a total of 34 units, providing a much greater balance towards family-sized accommodation, a substantial number of four- and three-bed houses. You do, on the other hand, have a reduced amount of spa and other facilities to go with it, around about 45% of the floor space that was previously proposed. You have an opportunity here, I believe, to tie together the various elements of the scheme into a cohesive whole. Although there are four applications here, it's important that we don't end up with a partially completed scheme or a scheme where certainly the listed building elements don't get completed. So through the 106, we would recommend that you tie the various elements together. Discuss with the applicant how that might be done, and we're talking about a schedule of works to the listed building, and again through a section 106, which secure that those works take place. We've also talked, I've just gone through the design concerns from English Heritage. We have looked at those, and our view as officers is that the lower terrace is acceptable. We've talked about the highways issues. In relation to trees, your Arborough Cultural Officer has provided some comments which are in the late representations. He, I believe, is satisfied, we've spoken to him about it, with the impact on the trees, but that is provided that we get suitable method statements in place to ensure that we do retain those trees around the boundaries of the site. So those are the key issues. The remaining issue is one of the Section 106 and how that operates, and also in terms of the ordinary contributions you would expect from the scheme of this type. We would ordinarily expect to see an affordable housing provision. Normally that would be provided on site. You would also expect to see sustainable development contributions coming forward as part of it. In this case, a viability assessment has been gone through and negotiations have been undertaken in that respect. And there is no scope through that viability assessment for the provision of affordable housing on site or for an off-site contribution. That is because the percentage of profit on gross development value is below that which you would expect in order to properly finance a scheme. So effectively what we have is an offer from the developer to provide a total of £170,000 as a commuted sum payment. That will be taken probably in two instalments. You'll have your £68,000 contribution first, and then a later contribution of £102,000 would come as a result of the sale of a management company which could be set up to run the grounds of the development. So the offer is currently £170,000, and that's on the basis of a viability assessment that shows that the scheme is still not viable to provide any level of contribution. However, our colleagues in the Torbay Development Agency have very recently given me some further advice to take another look at the land value. Now, in the equation of working out gross development value, land value is obviously one of the key things that goes into that equation. And it's been recommended that we have a further look at land value and ask for what's called a red book valuation, which is a third-party valuation of the land. If that were to be undertaken, it may be that the percentage on gross development value that the scheme can yield in terms of profit could be higher, and as such there is a potential for further contribution to come forward from the developer. So that's the situation which we're in that respect. We have a new offer from the previous one of now of £170,000, but there is this potentially unresolved issue around land value. As a result, our recommendation is slightly different to that which you see in the report. And I would like to recommend that as officers, that you allow us, if you're happy to, that you effectively delegate to officers the resolution of this application. So it would be in line with what we've put forward in the in page 8 of your report. So it would be for conditional approval, would be subject to delivering an acceptable level of affordable housing contribution. At the moment, as I say, there is an offer on the table of £170,000, and we would like, through a reappraisal of the Red Book valuation, to have another look at that and see whether more funds can be drawn from the scheme. And it's also subject to the conclusion of the 106 agreement, in line with all the things I've discussed with you about how we would draw in the contributions, tie the development together, and provide the list of building improvements. There are a set of conditions itemised at the end of the report, which you would also be subject to. So the recommendation would be delegated approval to officers, subject to the resolution of those matters on page 8 of your report. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now I have two speakers, Mr. Frank Nixie and Mr. Anthony Eek. If you would like to come to the table, please, and then you can do your presentation. Now, you have a total of 20 minutes, which you will share between you. How you share that out is obviously entirely up to you. You don't have to use all the time, but it's available to you if you require it. And you will be warned before you come to the end of your time when you're getting near and asked to wind up your remarks. Press the button to put your microphone on and then go ahead when you're ready, please.
Is it on now?
Yes.
Oh, thank you very much. Madam Chairman, members, officers, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Firstly, I'm sure you would appreciate the last position that I really wished to be in this afternoon to have to address you was with any outstanding issues, which we have genuinely endeavoured to ensure that there were no issues unresolved before the matter came to before you. However, we do have this situation which has arisen over the question of the valuation of the site, and we have confirmed to the officers today, this morning, that we are perfectly happy to entertain arranging for a Red Book valuation to take place. The remit would be, obviously, as Mr. Roberts confirmed, a third-party Red Book valuation. So there would be the opportunity of an equal voice on both sides as to who conducts that valuation on proposal. And then, obviously, we hope to bring the matter back to you as soon as it's feasible to do so. Pardon me, excuse me. The approach that we would have like to adopt this afternoon, if it's possible, is I'd like to just add a few very brief comments regarding the design of the scheme. I would also like to incorporate one or two points within the scheme design that have been raised by a number of members at the members' briefing meeting, which didn't get properly answered. Mr. Anthony Eake here from Vickery Holman will then present the financial report position, and once that report position has been briefly explained, I would then like to conclude, if I may, with going through the financial aspects as far as we're concerned, as to how it affects the development and how it affects the overall position from there onwards. With that said, we have been working with the officers for a 15-16 month period to date, and throughout that period there has been a number of design changes. I think in actual fact it's 4 in total. The officers have been extremely helpful, and we do thank you, Mr. Roberts, you and your team, for the way in which you've helped us with the site. We now feel, pardon me, that we do have a very good scheme that has got a nice mixer blend of one-bedroom and two-bedroom cottages. It's got one-bedroom and two-bedroom apartments, and it's got 3 and four-bedroomed terraced houses. The larger houses, obviously, are the 2 rows of 9, as shown, and under those properties, we now have the engineered roadway to provide the underground parking, which, as far as the demographics are concerned and voiced by a number of agents, they thought that was very critical, and they also considered that the previous scheme did not provide adequacy for family use and for a family orientated development. And so that's really what led to that, together with developers that had expressed interest in a better balance of houses within the scheme. The conservation officer particularly wanted to see, in the top right-hand corner, the western part of the site, wanted to see the building reduced back in size. It comes, as it stands at this moment, can you press the centre of that area of the mews at the back, Mr. Roberts? As you can see, it comes virtually to the centre of the open space. So the design there has ensured that those rear buildings move away from the period villa by about another 15 metres, which is very significant, which is the reason I wanted to mention that. There's about, with the demolition of the section on the right-hand side of those mews apartments at the rear, that will create the separation of around 7 to 8 metres. So altogether, those two major areas of design have actually altered the situation very considerably. one of the questions that were raised at the members' briefing meeting, which was reported to us after the meeting itself, was to develop a level of affordable housing. Could we not consider deleting the leisure facilities and thereby contributing the monies that were allocated for refurbishing of the leisure, could we not consider deleting those and make those contributions to affordable housing? I hope that we're able to demonstrate to you as we go through. We had left the original approved plans for the villa. We had left the basement, which is where the main thrust of the reduced leisure area is going to be. We'd left that in that location, and there would be no other use for that part of the building at all. And just to the right-hand side of the villa, at the lower ground floor level, is where we're proposing to put a small swimming pool. We've discussed this in general terms with all of the agents that have advised us, and they've all confirmed that a small leisure facility for residents only would be a desirable factor and would attract a small premium. And this is the reason why within our report, our viability report, we adopted the higher level, or the highest level, of the three schedules of sales values we were given. And that was on the basis of believing that, pardon me, I'm sorry, believing that that facility would be highly desirable for the majority of residents involved when considering that a number of one-bedroom properties and two-bed small properties could be first-time buyers. So young people obviously would like the facilities of a gymnasium and a swimming pool, etc., etc. So that was why we left those in. I'll talk about the monetary effects of that, if I may, a little later. There's no other points that I wish to mention as far as the design is concerned, other than to mention that the 8 apartments in the mansion house, we did feel was, when looking at it in the cold, sober light of day, was an overdevelopment by breaking up the principal reception rooms. We thought that was not the correct way to attend to the building, and we thought it was far more sensitive and far more sensible to leave good-sized reception rooms with a dual use and have a reasonable reception room that you would expect when walking out of those. So that's why it led to a quite considerable change and alteration from the first scheme, which had a snooker room and a lounge for cards, a games room, it was termed, together with 3 apartments on that ground floor, which led to a very, very poor situation. And there would have been a further scheme, actually an amendment scheme applied by Kay Elliott's, had time allowed before we actually went to committee the first time. So we now feel that in all aspects of the 3 major areas of the development that we're able to present to you a far, far improved scheme. And if I may hand you over, please, for a few moments to Anthony, I'll then come back on the viability aspects, if I may. Thank you, Anthony.
Good afternoon. The planning applications to be determined are effectively they're designed to enable the refurbishment of what is a Grade 2 listed building, as is consistent with English Heritage's policy. They, of course, have fallen into a state of disrepair, and they need to be brought up to what is a habitable standard and back into some form of economic use, which I think is generally encouraged by Torbay Council. This would, of course, incur abnormal costs and additional costs over and above what you would normally expect from a residential development, requiring subsidy from private finance, because, as we all know, public sector finance now for these kind of projects is not available. And of course, all these factors have to be considered within a development appraisal. Such an attempt was made under the previous planning application, which was previously mooted. In 2009, planning consent was granted with the benefit of a substantial Section 106 agreement agreed in lieu of affordable housing at that time. However, due to significant change in market conditions, the sums required under that Section 106 have proven to be far too onerous and as such resulted in an undeliverable scheme, hence why we have now come back. The current planning applications have all been derived to try and present a solution to this and deliver a scheme to provide vital housing within the Torbay area while achieving the aim of refurbishing the listed building. Vickery Holman were instructed to undertake an independent viability assessment with Torbay Development Agency employed by Torbay Council to effectively confirm our figures. A series of appraisals were undertaken to determine the viability of the scheme and the level of contributions that could be supported. Throughout, we adopted, or tried to adopt, a reasonable approach using build costs generated from a quantity surveyor, a qualified quantity surveyor, even though they were £400,000 less than standard market assumptions would actually derive. Furthermore, we adopted the highest sales figures, as Frank Connie alluded to, justified from the evidence collected, even though the current advice from local estate agents suggests that we should actually be around about 5% lower. So we've tried to take a balanced approach wherever possible. The appraisals undertaken demonstrated that when assuming a land value which would not result in immediate and substantial loss to the current landowner, the scheme would not support any financial contributions to the local authority. A 12.5% return on gross development value was achieved in that instance, on the basis of no affordable housing and nil contributions, which remains significantly below what would be required to obtain commercial finance, which would be required to deliver a development scheme of this nature. The Torbay Development Agency confirmed these figures within their report and concluded that substantial changes would be required before contributions could reasonably be expected. Admittedly, one of those aspects is the figures, or the matter they have now raised, which of course, we have agreed to address. We did also conclude that this would be a politically unpopular conclusion, unsurprisingly so, and is likely to result in a... it's likely to conclude in... so it's not likely to conclude in a consent being granted. As the client remains determined to deliver such a scheme, and in particular to refurbish the Mansion House, we worked with the client and the local authority to try and achieve an acceptable position. As part of this, he has agreed to pay £68,000 as the required contributions toward infrastructure. In terms of principle, regarding the affordable housing, we have no issue that should the scheme be financially viable to provide a contribution towards affordable housing, then it should. However, current figures suggest that it cannot. In light of this, should the scheme benefit from an improved performance, we have agreed that a deferred payment can be attracted. This is generally agreed to be on the basis of a growth in sales values achieved. The benefit of this to the local authority is that it will not be limited by any inflation that could possibly be incurred on build costs, which are predicted to be circa 5% per annum for the next few years. We were further advised that the position of a nil contribution, even with this deferred payment, would unlikely be acceptable by yourselves. As such, we've worked through the appraisal to try and seek other income sources by which to generate a contribution. It is common practice within residential schemes for a management company to be set up to manage the common aspects of the estate. This normally only attracts a nominal value going forward. However, in this instance, the client has elected to charge a ground rent on any sales being achieved. Bear in mind they're going to be sold on long leasehold basis, not freehold, rather than the peppercorn basis that was originally proposed. Although, of course, there is the risk from our perspective that this would actually reduce some of the attractiveness of the units and could actually reduce the sales values further from what's already been predicted. The benefit of the ground rents would be transferred over to the management company through the freehold being transferred. It has then been agreed, following completion of the scheme, this management company be sold with the benefits of the freehold interest and the ground rents to a private company. The receipt of such will be paid directly to the local authority as a contribution towards affordable housing, subject to a minimum sum of £102,000. From a valuation perspective, these concessions will all have a negative impact on the development return, which, as we have demonstrated within our viability report, has already been squeezed. However, we understand that the client is willing to consider these actions in order to secure consent. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Firstly, it's obviously an embarrassing situation for me as a local resident to be actually sat here saying that we can't make these affordable housing contributions, particularly given the fact that we agreed £333,000 with their first application. This was a question raised at the meeting by a lady member who is here this afternoon. She raised this question. It wasn't actually properly answered. The situation is that over the last 4.5 years, pardon me, my apologies, we've endeavoured to find either a joint development partner or a developer to purchase half of the site, the eastern half of the site to the right, all without success. Hence the reason why, unfortunately, the whole site is still lumbering and sat there. We also have endeavoured to bring in two developers as joint development partners together with that eastern site, and that looked as though it was going to have some merits at one stage, but ultimately that fell down on funding, which the scheme has fallen down on funding on two occasions. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you how difficult banks have made life in the marketplace for the last 3 or 4 years. They're extremely, extremely stringent and anti-funding arrangements that include costs which they deem are not necessary to be paid. And right at the top of that list is affordable housing contributions. The other areas that are right at the top of the list is unnecessary, lavish infrastructure arrangements that actually lead to more expenditure being exerted on the project than need be. Now, in all of those instances, and there are a good number of others, the overall approach is to either increase the rate of interest by 1-3%, or most importantly, reduce the level of capital on a loan-to-value basis. Now, we've experienced this actually twice, where a developer, his capital requirement was 70% of GDV, and it was downgraded to 60%. Now, these are the reasons we knew that... sorry, my apologies. We knew that the site was a tight site to develop the first time around, and we knew that the margins were tight because on the first appraisal it was 5.5%. It is now incidentally 12.25% today. That's right, isn't it?
12.5, but yeah.
Pardon?
12.5%.
Sorry, 12.5%. But that doesn't alter the fact that we have endeavoured to make certain that none of the figures that we presented in the report could be factually challenged or evidenced to be incorrect. Anthony has made the point that we actually, if we took the BCSI's development costs, that would amount to £400,000 extra that we could have pinned. But we actually engaged Greenwoods, whom we've known for 15 years, to produce a report that we wanted, pardon me, and to produce figures that we could ultimately rely on when it came to developing the other half of the site. Likewise, the position as far as the sales are concerned, the revenue sales on the basis of the GDV, that amounted to 200 and...
Getting close to the end of your time, Mr. Nixie, so if you can, you know, make your points as concisely as possible,
thank
please.
You, Madam Chair. Yes, thank you, Ryan. Yeah, that amounted to the reduction, the increase on, the reduction rather, on GDV, if we'd have actually followed the precise evidence figures that we have got, that would have reduced our overall GDV of 9.54 million, it would have reduced it by 325,000. So altogether, just those two factors alone is £725,000, an awful lot of money. Now, it's against that climate, I'm afraid, that we were not able to offer more unless this valuation comes out in anything differently. We do, in conclusion, have two developers that are unquestionably interested in progressing with the eastern half of the site if, in point of fact, we have a similar type consent to the one presented now, or identical even. Once that actually occurs, we are geared and funded to actually develop the western half of the site, which is the period Italianate villa and the apartments at the rear, with the demolition and new build. So I can say, hand on heart, it's a deliverable scheme. I'm conscious that I mustn't exceed the time, so I do thank you for the time that you've granted me. And sorry, there's a muddle over this question of the Lyle's evaluation. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Right, members. Councillor Kingscote, you have a question?
Yes, Chairman. I believe this is an important Victorian Grade 2 villa in Torquay, and I would like to see it restored to a high standard. In the report, Mr. Roberts, I didn't read anything about the restoration. We noticed today the glass roof over the porch or portico that needs restoring. Also, the restoration of the shutters on the outside of the building, around the building on the outside. We noted a number of those were either missing or damaged, and I didn't read anything about that, you know, the finer details, that would actually restore the house to its former glory. So I just wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah, I'll come back on that, because on page 8, we haven't been very specific about it, but what we have had, and we have discussed this with the applicant, Mr. Nixie, we've included there that would be in the 106 a mechanism to deliver implementation of a schedule of works to restore the listed villa and obviously to replace the adjacent Mews building and move it back away from it. So what we'd have to do as part of the section 106 is formulate or append to the 106 a schedule of works to the building which would be agreed with us and our conservation officers, and we'll point out the aspects we highlighted on site.
Councillor Pentney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If we agree to what the officers are suggesting, that subject to a Red Book investigation, we defer everything to the officers, won't that result in decisions being made behind closed doors?
That's a very good question. I think what we did discuss this earlier on in the day. As officers, we're minded to try and move the project forward, and felt that if you were happy with all other matters, that this matter notwithstanding, that you were happy with everything else, then it could be that a Red Book valuation, which is something done outside of officers,
and by a third party would help to kind of move the project forward with a mandate from yourselves. However, if there are still ongoing concerns, there's no problem at all for officers to bring back perhaps just that element of the decision to yourselves as a committee, rather than delegating the whole lot. So it could be that you conclude as members of a committee that the remainder of the scheme is acceptable, but you would want to resolve this aspect of the Section 106 and the final figures as a committee, in which case we could certainly bring that element back to you. I'd merely concluded as an officer that in order to move the project forward, for you to make a decision today, it might assist in delegating it through. But, as I say, if you're concerned about that aspect, we could certainly bring back that part of the project to you as a committee.
Just to clarify that as well, we could do that in partnership with the Chair and David Thomas as the strategic lead. Quite happy to do that, so it won't be just officers, if that provides you with some assurance.
But that doesn't include the Development Management Committee.
No, but as Peter says, we're more than happy to bring back this issue if we fail to agree and make sure that the committee see that. But if you're happy with the baseline of where we are and we're only moving upwards, then that's the way to go.
Mr. Stockman?
I'm not sure if you'd be able to answer this. I didn't bring a copy of the representations, but Mr. Nixey sent a representation to us all that said the prices, the values of the properties, and then he's just indicated that possibly the one or one and two bedrooms may be first-time buyers. Is there a price on that? Because they gave us a price comparison down. Have you got on there what the one and two bedroom properties were valued at? Because I'm a bit concerned about that element of it, because we're arguing about affordable homes. Mr. Nixey is saying about first time buyers in the one bedrooms, but I don't know what the value of those first time, you know, buyers houses would be.
I haven't got the list of those values with me, but as we've discussed before, and as Mr. Nixey has put forward in the viability assessment, effectively, the higher end of values have been attributed to the site, so that they're not under-egging the pudding, if I can use that vague expression, that they're putting in higher values across the board. So, in effect, what we're looking at is, yes, higher values than you might otherwise expect in other parts of Tall Bay. There hasn't been just a broad assessment, because it is a premium site, as you saw early on today. So as to first-time buyers, depends what kind of first-time buyer and what kind of money you have. Yeah.
Sorry, Mr. Nixey, I can't allow you to come back because we just allocate a certain amount of time, which gives you... So I can't allow you to come back with any comments. If you're having discussions with officers afterwards, well, that's a different matter, but not in the meeting, I'm afraid I can't allow it. Councillor Morey, please.
Thank you, Chair. Just to concur with Councillor Kingscote, I mean, the villa itself is a beautiful building. Actually, in the rooms we went in internally didn't seem that bad. The issue was the external conditions. However, when we had the briefing with the developers a couple of weeks ago, the main concern was on the level of contribution. The original level of contribution was 399,500, I believe. Next thing back on the offer then was 68 grand, which was five times less. Now, purely from my brain, all on offer at the minute is 170, correct? Okay, I'll leave the rest till later.
That's correct. If I could just sort of clarify matters, the original offer, which included an affordable housing contribution and the normal sustainable development contributions, amounted to just under 400,000, associated with a very different scheme. So we must sort of draw, you can draw comparisons. Yes, that was the level of contribution. It was a scheme which had a lower gross development value as a sort of profit margin than this one. So you would sort of question, well, if you can put forward that, then why not again? But again, a number of things have happened since then. The whole spa facility, which would have brought in a big injection of upfront cash, has gone. the capacity to bring forward the development has just sort of melted away in the financial environment we're in. So, yes, there is that in the background, but I think the reality must also hold that the new position is that the scheme remains unviable pending consideration of this land value.
Councillor Addis.
Madam Chairman, I'm not going to talk about the 106 agreement because I'm sure we'll resolve that problem in due course. I'm much more concerned about the highways aspect at this moment in time. I'm concerned about the visibility display. No, you may well look at each other and think Councillor Addis is at it again. I am slightly worried about it, and I'm worried about the width of the general access to the lower half. Can you give me some reassurance, please?
The comments we got from our highways are repeated on page 10. They've got no objection based on the previous use of the site as a hotel, but they would favour widening the access to Lower Warby Road. And this is very much a point we have often coming up, which is that a pre-existing use or a previous use in this case sets a precedent for a use of an access which otherwise might not be favourable. And given that it's already has been in use and is already in use at the moment, highways would accept we continue that. I think the problem is if you were to go to the nth degree and come up with a visibility display that's acceptable in highways term, you do lose a lot of the frontage of that access, the walls adjacent to it, which are an important character of the conservation area. So our conclusion on balance was that it was acceptable to leave it as it is.
Councillor Barnby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got three very quick questions, two about the actual plan and one about the 106. I'm a bit confused with the area under the terrace. What exactly is it going to be now if it's not going to be sporting? Is it going to be just left empty? If the pool's going to the right of it, what's happening in the basement? Is it going to be used? Second one, very quickly, we're talking about 18 family homes or four-bedroom homes. What kind of, I don't see it in the plan, unless I've misread it, what kind of sort of gardens, or are they all going to be formal if you're going to have children? That's my second question. And thirdly, I'm getting confused about this 106. Do we have any, even if you're not prepared to say so, do we have any sum that we would find acceptable?
Okay, I'll take them in order. The first one about the leisure facilities, they were originally, if you have a look on the plan there, were underneath this area of the plan here, and they've now been moved into the basement of the villa. Effectively in their place, because it's a different plan form, different arrangement of buildings, is the access to and the garages of the terrace. So there is no basement anymore. Effectively, it's the garaging and undercroft of the terrace. That's the first point. In terms of the gardens, yes, it is predominantly the formal gardens. But if I can go to the section, you'll see that there is a small area, well, actually, it's highlighted here, the small area of garden to the properties at the back onto Middle Warby Road. And that level, I believe you can see on section, has been terraced. So the intention is that you can actually get out from the first floor into a garden area. So it's not just right at the bottom here. So yes, you've got your formal garden areas, but also there is that small courtyard area at the back of those properties. The other ones, there is, I believe, on this plan, a small garden area as you step down into the access. So, yes, there will be some private garden spaces, perhaps more formal than you ordinarily see. And in terms of the question, the elephant in the room, I think the position is this, that the viability assessment shows that the development is unviable, okay, and I think we've agreed on that. It shows that it's unviable. So we have to question the viability assessment and the various elements which go into it. So we've spent a lot of time doing that, and that's where we've ended up at this big element of money built into it, which is land value. So I think really until we've tested that properly through Red Book valuation, we can't say what amount should come from the scheme. But at the moment, an offer is being put forward, notwithstanding this 12.5% profit margin, which is less than one would expect, which is worthy of consideration. Very difficult to tell. I couldn't put a figure on it because we haven't done the math. But yeah.
Right. Anybody else have any questions? Is there any debate then, please? Councillor? Yes? No, I haven't. Councillor Addis.
Yes, I heard that. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I know this area very, very well. I went to school in the area right opposite. I know the Victorian villas very well. Indeed, my company did a great deal of work some time ago on this property. I welcome this. I think it updates, it invigorates. It's something that's been hanging around for a very long time. And I do congratulate you on using natural stone. I think it adds to the property, it adds to the ambience, and it's all in total keeping. I rest my case for a moment, Madam Chair.
Councillor Pentney, please.
No, I can't support this at all. Because the affordable housing contribution. The Speaker himself pointed out the banks will not lend on lavish programmes. What is a swimming pool is not lavish. I don't see where we're going with it. And I just cannot support it without an affordable housing contribution, which I'm not happy at all about a matter being done behind closed doors.
Thank you. Councillor Baldry.
Thank you, Chair. I'm minded with the Councillor Addis that this thing really ought to move forward. Yes, we do need affordable housing, but my understanding is that if we were to approve it, correct me if I'm wrong, but if we were to approve it, it would be given a red book value, so we'd be able to tell how much the land is worth, and we'd be able to charge affordable housing contribution on that basis. Is that right?
What that would do is that may change the equation. So effectively, at the moment, there's the land value in there of 2.4 million. There's a whole equation that goes into this, obviously, yeah. As you know, costs and sales values and everything else. If that land value were to go down because of a red book valuation, then that will effectively increase the percentage uplift on gross development value. And if that were to get closer to and much closer to 20%, then we could have a reasonable negotiation with the developer as to raising the contribution.
Right. But where I was going was I minded to wish to move this forward, to give it, can we prove it conditionally? My suggestion is we prove it conditionally based on bringing back to this committee the section of affordable housing contribution.
To 106 agreement.
To 106.
Are you proposing?
I am.
Approval subject to delegating to officers to further negotiate, is subject to Peter Roberts said earlier on.
What I said was to bring the section 106 back to this committee.
Yes, but the but whole
in,
principle.
In essence, I'm saying to approve it in principle.
Okay. Do you have a seconder for that, please? Is that Councillor Barmby? Right. I'll take Councillor Morey's comments first, and then we'll go to the vote.
Very briefly, I think I'll support that, Chair. Design issues, I've got no design issues at all. I think it's jolly good idea. I do, as members did have major concerns about the contribution, I do believe it's the correct decision that if issues do arise, it should come back to this committee.
Right, well, we have a proposition then. Those in favour of supporting that, please indicate.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
And that's on the conditions that Councillor Mr. Roberts has indicated to you.
May I make it completely clear, Madam Chair, that this does come back to this?
Yes, we can do that. And also, this negates the previous planning permission, will it not?
We certainly include within the provisions of the agreement that upon implementation of this, the previous consent effectively expires.
It is expired, yes. Okay. Right. Those against, please. One. Okay. So that's... The second part of the...
That's a...
Yes, well, we now have to take a vote on the other points that are before you. Do you want to see them all again, or would you? No? All right. Well, in that case, can we have a proposal on the second part of the proposition, which is the application 0400?
So moved.
Thank you. And a seconder, please. And those in... That's approval. Those in favour, please indicate. With all the conditions, yes. And those against? Abstentions? Appears to be one. Thank you. The next one is 0401. Again, do I have a proposal, please? Councillor Barmby? Yes, seconder? Councillor Baudry, all those in agreement, please. Against? Thank you. Abstentions? Seems to be one. And finally, application 0891. Proposal, please. Councillor Baldry, seconder. Councillor Barmby, those in agreement, please.
One, two, three.
And yes, all with the same conditions. Any against or abstentions? Thank you. We know where we are. Thank you very much. That concludes the meeting. Thank you very much. Thank you.